So this week and next week, I'm basically going to talk about the same thing, two sides of the same coin. David asked me to share a message that I gave recently on God made humans in God's own image, and unfortunately, we returned the favor. Right? And that whole talk was about throwing out the concept of original sin, which you guys have already thrown out, and bringing in a mystery, a majestic God that is so massive you can't begin to describe it to anybody else. But I wanted to talk about that in more practical detail, and the way that I've chosen to do that is to share a little bit of my spiritual connection with two saints. The first one that I'm going to talk about today is Saint Columba, and then next Sunday, I'm going to talk about St. Francis. These are the two saints that I feel like I know. I know them. You know, St. Columba lived 1,500 years ago, but I feel like I really know him. And St. Francis lived about 800 years ago. I feel like I know him too. I pray with them. I seek spiritual guidance from them. I treat them as if they're my invisible teachers. They're a doorway into this sacred mystery that is bigger than I can conceptualize, and I learn from them. What I love about them is the way that they incarnate their concept of what God is, the way that they reflect their God through their actions and behaviors. And also, especially, the way they touch creation. The way that they relate to the animals and the beings and the rocks and the very details of, like, the fabric of their clothes, even. Matter matters to them. Being holy really matters, but physical matter, our incarnation, our world, is God's world to them, and it matters, and they're going to treat it with great care. I also love them because they're connected, authentic, joyful, and empathic, compassionate, and powerful role models for me. But today we're going to talk about St. Columba. So St. Columba is the person in Scotland that brought Christianity over. He is known as an incredible pillar in the Celtic Christian tradition. So what is Celtic Christianity? What is this thing that Pam and I allure to and very, very rarely define? I found a definition the other day by Mary Earle that I loved. She says, "The sea, the sky, the trees, the animals, and the stars, all these are continually speaking the praise of God, but without human speech. God is speaking through creation, but without words." And it is the vocation of everything in creation to praise God, not only in song and poetry, but also by living creatively within the divine design and pattern. One of the big influences on our current understanding of the old monks was on their crosses. There's all these weavings, there's all these Celtic knotwork, right? Everything is woven with, and they did a lot of weaving. You know, even their boats were woven. Weaving was something they did a lot of. And when I was on Iona, I wove too with willow. And also on the crosses, on one side, you've got the animals and representations of creation, and on the other side, you've got the Bible stories. There's no separation. There's no kind of our world is bad, so you need to live as if you're in the Holy Land. It's like this is right here, right now, and there's all sorts of wonderful legends that are just so unbelievably true. Unbelievably true. I love that. That are putting our local characters into the story. On the front of my CD, it's a painting of a legend in which our local lass, who used to be a goddess called Bide, was taken away by angels to be Jesus's wet nurse. We're placing our spirituality into the context of this new biblical story, because we'd never heard anything about Judaism or Christianity. This was a really revolutionary idea. And to the Druids and the Celts, God, like the old God, was terrifyingly powerful. You could not look upon God's face and live. I mean, that's what the Torah tells us. But I think it was also very true of the Celts. The Druids were very powerful, holy people. They were terrifying as well, and they kept themselves separate. We know things like they probably did human sacrifice. That's what the Romans tell us. They definitely did not allow other people to have the medicine. Nobody other than a Druid was allowed to eat mushrooms. You know, they held a lot of power. And people were very frightened of them, a bit like a witch doctor, I imagine, in Africa. So who is St. Columba? Well, when I lived in the Abbey, we would describe him like this. O God, who gave to your servant Columba the gifts of courage, faith, and cheerfulness, and then sent people out from Iona to carry the word of your light to every creature. He was a very powerful man, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about him. He was born to a family of kings. He was a poet. He was a bard. He was trained as a monk from an early age. He was a powerful person that everybody liked. He was very powerful. He studied all over Ireland, even went and was influenced by the French Christianity that happened in Gaul. And while he was in one of the abbeys in Ireland, he was doing that practice that they did where they would copy the manuscript and they would make it beautiful. It's called illuminated writing. And it was a way in which they took the holy message and they wrote it down, making it real and really bringing it to life with beauty. And he was doing this with the Book of Psalms. And then at the end of the time, once he'd finished it, he took it with him. And the abbot said, you bring that book back here. Now remember, books are really powerful back then. They're written on calf's skin. They're really powerful. This is the Book of Psalms. Most people only know it by memory. Here it is, written down, holy thing, sacred object. Oh. So he takes it with him. And the abbot complains. And he complains so much that the king gets involved. And they have a court. It's the very first time copyright is ever recorded in history. And the king's court says, you know, each cow owns its calf, so each book should own its copies. Columba, you need to give it back. And Columba said, no, I'm not giving it back. I don't know what his reasons were. Did he want to share that message? Did he want to be powerful? Did he believe it was God's message and had nothing to do with the abbot? I don't know, but what happened was a battle occurred and 3,000 people died. The golden boy makes a mistake and he kills 3,000 of his kinsmen. And that's where the story with Iona starts. He was banished. He was banished from Ireland and he was sent out away to the edges. Now, the only place he could go where the Romans did not have power was Scotland, because the Romans hated Scotland. When they came up, they decided it was awful. They went back to England and they built a wall. I like to think it's because we were so ferocious, but they were soft Italians. I think they hated the weather. Either way, right? The Romans had decided that they couldn't be bothered with Ireland, all those Druids and barbarians and rain. And they definitely hated Scotland because they left. So Columba went in a little woven coracle with 12 followers and he left. And the story is he was so in so much pain and so heartbroken to leave his life behind that he slept on the flagstone of loneliness, which was a magical stone that if you slept on it, it would take your sorrow for you. He was absolutely devastated. And he, in 563, arrived on Iona. Now, this is where my mum's stories come in. My mum says he arrived and the Druids were on the island. and they had a big argument. There's lots of stories about the arguments between St. Columba and the Druids. There was no crusades. It was no kind of, I will kill you because you don't believe what I believe. They had competitions and arguments. And on one of these competitions, they were talking about God. And they were standing on the beach. And the Druid said, no, no, this guy, Jesus, got nothing to do with God. And they said, no, the sun, this is the way to God. This is God. And Columba went, no, and he rubbed it out. And he drew a cross and he said, no, this is the doorway. This is the way to God. You can't look upon the face of your powerful God, but you can look upon Christ. He is the way. And the Druids were having none of it, so they rubbed it out. And they drew the circle again. This is God, and we're not budging. So Columba thought about it. And he said, ah, this is God. And he rubbed it out. And he said, the sun and the cross, all of it is God. And that's why the Celtic cross has the circle behind it. Now that's a story from my family, from the MacCallums. The MacCallums are son of Colum Seal. My mother's side are from the clan associated with Columba. I'm a MacCallum. Whether it's true or not, it is a true representation of how we now understand Celtic Christianity, that God is in everything, in this creation, that instruction in Genesis is about God made the world and it was good. You know, this idea that God shimmers through all of creation. You can see it in people's eyes. You can see it in the seasons. You can see it in the tree. You can see it everywhere if you only look. Why Columba is really important to me as a teacher about God is because he left his life behind, because he failed so drastically and he started over. He was put in that position that A Course of Miracles and 12 Steps talk about, where you hit rock bottom and you say, I can't. There has to be a better way. And that surrender, that ego place of stretching your ego aside so something much more vibrant can work in and through you, is the channel. Make me a channel of your peace. That is the magical thing. And he, in his struggle, didn't just become worthless. And he started over, he started afresh, he went to a new place. He tried to make himself a vessel, and he was incredibly successful and very, very brave in a wild world where death was just around the corner. You know, it's hard for us to understand the survival that it was for them back then. I talk about this as standing naked before your God, where you've done your work to be much more honest about who you really are. And then every night on my prayer mat, I take my shoes off and I step onto sacred space. And in that Islamic tradition, you remember that you can't see God, but God can see you. And you go, Hineni, here I am. That's the first part of the call to prayer. Allah Akbar, there's nothing but God. And that's why I love the song that you guys have got, Oh God, You Search Me and You Know Me. And we're going to do that. But I want us to think about in ourselves, when we're in that position of rock bottom and surrender, it's a very powerful song if we think about it from that point of view, which is standing naked before your God. You're welcome to join me. God, You search me and You know me. All my thoughts lie open to Your gaze. When I walk or lie down, You are before me, ever the maker and keeper of my days. You know my resting and my rising. You discern my purpose from afar. and with love everlasting you besiege me. In every moment of life or death you are. Before word is on my tongue, Lord, you have known its meaning through and through. You are with me beyond my understanding, God of my present, my past and future too. Although your spirit is upon me, still I search for shelter from your light. There is nowhere on earth I can escape you. Even the darkness is radiant in your sight. For you created me and shaped me, gave me life within my mother's womb. For the wonder of who I am, I praise you. Safe in your hands, all creation is made new. And that, safe in your hands, all creation is made new, a core teaching of Easter Sunday, is so powerful. You know, he didn't keep himself small. He wasn't racked with guilt. I don't know how he wasn't. He wasn't. He was a loving presence that cried with a horse the day before he died as an old man. He really made good. I really believe he was cheerful. He was extremely dedicated in his spiritual practice. And let me tell you about how I met Columba. Right, so we're getting into mystical stuff here. So I'll try and explain it as best I can, but that's always hard to do. So maybe one or two people don't know that I lived on Iona for 3 years. I lived in the abbey, which there's many buildings being built on the site where St. Columba founded his first abbey. And when I was there, a lot of things happened to me. I had a lot of mystical experiences. Iona is a very thin place. We say thin because the distance between heaven and earth is tissue thin. And I don't know why, but I was able to hear God's wisdom much more clearly. I was able to be in the middle of miracles all the time. Amazing things happened, and that's where I felt the call to do ministry in a new way that didn't exist yet. Lots of things happened. And one of the things that happened when I was there is that my life went really, really badly wrong. My marriage hit the rocks. She fell in love with someone else. He was the minister in charge. Everything about it was so awful. And I was the one, I wish I could have known about that flagstone. I was devastated to leave my holy island and my community and my job and my income. I just did not want to go. I loved it there so much. I was devastated. I mean, I carry little rocks of the island everywhere with me. And like St. Columba went there to start his new life, I left carrying Iona in me. And the night I made that decision is when I met Columba. I remember I was just so desperate. I was lying in bed next to my ex-wife who had her back turned. You know, I don't know how many of you have been in that. Just praying, God, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? God, just show me what to do. And I received a vision. And in that vision, there was an old monk standing in the corner of the abbey. And he pointed. And I said to him in my daydream state, I don't see what you're pointing at. And all of a sudden, the walls of the abbey disappeared. And I realized, oh, he's a Celtic monk. That's why there's no walls there, because they worshipped outside. I put him in the abbey because that was my holy place, but he was outside. And he pointed down to Martyrs Bay. And there was a coracle, an empty coracle. And I knew that the monks, this is what they did when they had to leave Ireland. When God said, you need to go and carry this light out. And I knew that it was my turn. And that night I made the decision to leave. And I left a few days later and I didn't go back. And it brought me here. It brought me to this incredible life that I have. But that was the first time I met St. Columba. And often I've gone back because he's a very stern. He's not at all like St. Francis. He's not a very gentle man. He's not really who I was. He's not at all like my supervisor. I have a counselor that I go to who's a very gentle lady. No, he's pretty harsh and strong. And he encourages me to face my fears, to stand up in the wind, to share my ideas of what this beautiful compassion is. Be wrong. Don't worry if people don't understand you. It's important that you share your light. It's important that you go out to the places that frighten you so that you can realize you're okay. It's important to be spiritually bulletproof because you never know when your last breath is going to come. That's what he says. Without words. So he encourages me to do two things. Face my fears, and the other one is do my work to meet God. Don't just be like, I'll just drink a lot of wine and maybe I'll do my prayers tomorrow. No, right now. You do your work right now and you allow yourself to be a clear channel because you don't know when somebody's going to turn up at your house. You don't know how much, you know, like that whole work of our spiritual practice and our prayer work, whatever it is, whether it's meeting with friends to have a book group, whether it's coming to church on Sunday, whether it's doing yoga, all of it. But we need to do it. And we need to do it every day. And he's pretty strict about that. He tells me I don't sing the psalms enough. That's my mystical sense of this guy that just walked around with me. If you guys want to come and see the pictures that I have that I'm showing the kids, please do at the end. He's willful, powerful, and wild. He lives in a wild world. You know, in the 1880s, there were Episcopalian monks that decided they were going to have a monastic community on Iona. And they came for 4 years, and all their crops didn't manage it. And they left because they were starving. And that was in 1880. They didn't manage it. That building that they built is where Pam and everybody is. It's called Bishop's House. But it's a reminder of how wild and how close to life and death that life was. So Columba, in his imitation of the Christ, found a way to co-create beautifully, to bring healing and fearlessness. He's known as a healer. His legacy is a loving wisdom. I think it was his faith in the Christ, and I'm not using the word Christianity because it's been so adopted by stuff that's got nothing to do with the teachings of Jesus. But his imitation of this beautiful teaching allowed him to be strong and powerful and fearless and then share a compassion with the rest of creation in a radical way. And one of the things that they do that I never hear anybody in Christianity talking about is they make beautiful. The Celtic monks spent hours and hours making the Book of Iona, which then became the Book of Kells. Have you heard of that? It was mostly written on Iona, and then the Vikings kept coming and killing the monks that they took this valuable, their most valuable possession. And what it is the gospel stories of the life of Jesus, illuminated with fine ink on calf skin. It's a really beautiful thing. It lives in Ireland. I've gone to visit it. But it was a way that they, like with their Celtic crosses, they took their inspiration and they made beautiful representations of their God. And as an artist, I really get that. If we can create a beautiful prayer, it really allows people to enter into that prayer more fully. When we are able to articulate a message, people are able to hear it better. There is something about imitating the intricate pattern of brilliance in the natural world, in imitating creation through our deeds. That's one of the things the monks did perfectly, and I would encourage us to do that. And it doesn't mean that we have to be an artist. It means that we do things with great care. There's a wonderful modern saint called Teresa of Lisieux, and she is called the Little Flower. And her teaching was, small acts done with great love change the world in ways profound. I'm going to tell you more about her next week. Coming soon to a church near you. Yeah, imitating the miracle of life, making space within us. They are the big teachings. And one other thing that they were really big on is communion. We don't have communion in this church. Communion has been one of those things that have been adopted and changed. But really, for me, communion is highly important because I am doing a body prayer in which I make space within Simon Ruth for God to dwell. For that Christ consciousness, that Buddha mind, that Atman, to come forward and flourish. And if I don't create space, if I don't do ritual and prayer and ask it to come in, it's not going to come in. I'm just going to be Simon Ruth. I like being Simon Ruth because it's me, and it's important that I am that. If I really want to be a channel, if I'm somebody that really wants to be a minister or somebody that goes to church and grows in my spirituality, we need to do something like communion. I don't care what it is, you can have a sacred fire and throw tobacco on it and say, come, Great Spirit, come into the details of my life. For me, I remember the last time Jesus was a living person and how he was being betrayed and how he made a blessing. He broke the bread and he created this ritual for his friends to stay connected with him. And I still do that 2,000 years later. If you guys want to do communion, come and speak to me and Pam, and we do it sometimes. So I've talked a lot about St. Columba. I realize that I need to talk about him more because he has a really beautiful connection with God that we need in our society these days with televisions and cars and, oh, it's raining, let's not go out. So Columba calls me to do so much more than just to surrender, to dedicate my life and steep myself in spiritual practice, to know God so intimately that I can carry her presence to every creature. That's the teaching. Amen.